Crossing boundaries can be something that happens for people daily or a big moment in their life. It can be a language boundary or a mental boundary, and anything in between. Our first interview is by Jeremiah Cunningham about his sister's pregnancy.
Hi, my name is Jeremiah Cunningham, and this is my podcast entitled Crossing Boundaries. Now, the boundaries I will cross talk about is pregnancy. About 3 years ago, my sister came home and notified me and my mother that she was pregnant.
When who told me that they were pregnant?
Now, this news startled me, but I was highly excited because it was a new face in our family, in our household. I remember like it was yesterday, preferably 3 years ago in 2009. My niece is three now, and a lot has changed. I remember like it was yesterday. My sister came in, and she said, "You guys, I have to tell you something." My mom, to this day, has kept with her thoughts that she knew that this was going to happen. I didn't know because I was 12 at the time. Now, when she said, "I'm pregnant," my jaw dropped, and I was like, "Oh, yay." But then again, in the same token, she was 19 at the time, living with my mother. And my mother had rules. She had to pay rent. She couldn't have any boys in the house. And the same rule was applied. So when me and her was growing up together, no babies will be born or being raised in the house. And she broke that rule. My mom really was, you know, she wasn't disappointed, but, you know, she knew, she already had a feeling it was coming. So, in this interview, you will actually hear my mom's side of the story and hear her answer some brief questions about how she felt about the situation and how it changed her view from then to now. Thank you and enjoy.
What was your reaction when she told you first that she was pregnant?
When who told me that they were pregnant?
Nikita.
I knew. My reaction, I wasn't upset because I knew before she knew. So I was just happy that she was happy.
How did you handle the situation?
I made sure she went to the doctor to get tested, to make sure she was pregnant. And when she found out she was pregnant, she did all the right things that she was supposed to do. She made doctor's appointments. She started to get plenty of rest. And she changed her eating habits, where she took care of herself and the baby growing inside of her.
God, I love you so much, Mom.
Knowing she lives with you, what precautions did you take?
As far as what?
What a baby coming and like, crossing boundaries and stuff.
What do you mean? I don't understand the question.
All right, so knowing that she was, like, under your house, under your rules, like, how did that feel?
Well, I felt as though, even though she was grown, I felt as though that she disregarded the rules of the house. But we have to realize that once children turn 18 and are working and trying to get out on their own, sometimes they're detoured in their way of life, and this was just a very happy detour.
Okay, knowing that it was a new baby coming in the house, like what kind of mindset were you in?
I was in a safety mindset. I wanted to make sure that the house was presentable, that it was baby-proof, that certain things were no longer done in the house, such as smoking was done outside of the house. There wasn't a lot of loud noises and things going on. We made the home very comfortable and ready for the baby.
Did you see this coming?
What, her pregnancy?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did.
Can you elaborate on it more?
Well, I saw that she was in love and that she wanted to make the next step. She wanted to get married and have a baby. Fortunately, she put the cart before the horse, and the baby came before the marriage. So I'm very happy about my grandbaby.
Okay, what are some pros and some cons about the whole situation?
What situation?
Well, the pros and the cons about her pregnancy from here.
Well,
what
the pros were that she was always a very good babysitter, and she was always very good with children, so I knew she would be a good mother. Another pro was I was glad and happy that she was home when she was pregnant and had Cheyenne, because I knew for a fact that she got the best prenatal care that was possible. And I was just happy because I was glad to see my grandbaby. And I'm glad to be there when she was born. The only pro that I had was my daughter didn't finish her degree in college, which she is finishing now. Even though she stopped, she didn't stop completely. It was just delayed. So that was a temporary setback.
She's pregnant again.
And the other one was, I know she really wanted to be married when she had her first child, but that was just a delay too. She's back on track according to the way she wanted to be. I'm just happy that I have a beautiful and healthy grandchild.
Okay, last question. Then and now, what's the differences from 2009 to now that she's three, to 2013? What have you seen a big change in?
What, the baby or?
Overall.
Her mother.
Both.
I seen her mother be more loving toward others. She's also very protective and cautious, not only over her child, but of myself and her brother. Sometimes she's a bit overbearing and a bit bossy, but you have to realize that
it's her child.
It's her child, and she's doing the best job she can. And I can honestly say I'm very proud of her, because she's basically doing it on her own, and she's doing a very good job.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you for the interview. Have a nice day.
The second interview by Alex Held is about his father's job as a teacher.
For my podcast, I chose to interview my dad about crossing boundaries in his job as a teacher. My dad is an intellectual heritage professor at Temple University and has a PhD in English literature. Here is what I recorded.
Let everyone get familiar with everyone else. At the beginning of the semester, in the first class, I stand at a lectern or sit behind a desk. I rove up and down the classroom. There's usually a center aisle that goes from front to back. And I'm there next to them when they're talking. And I keep the tone brisk and as entertaining as possible.
Laid back kind of talking to your students?
When there's an opportunity for a quick joke.
You don't hesitate to throw it in there?
No. And if they're laughing, if they're feeling engaged enough prospect of speaking in front of their fellow students doesn't intimidate them at all. That's what gets the material across to them.
So you try to get your students like warm up to not only you but to each other.
Exactly.
So they don't feel like not so much shy but like timid, I guess you could say.
A lot of students feel intimidated by the prospect of speaking up in front of others.
Maybe just college in general, you know, that change.
It's more females than males.
Really?
I think, you know.
I could see why.
In grade school and high school, unless they've gone to a single-sex school, they're more apt to speak up first, and not always with a valuable contribution. The to speak. Girls, I think some of them get used to deferring to that. You know, that's outmoded, it's sexist, it's not right. So in college, I want that.
You want that trend to be broken?
Completely.
Yeah. It's,
yeah. What they're learning in my class, aside from the content, what they're learning in terms of speaking and writing, because writing is so important.
In every aspect of life.
These are very marketable skills. Even if the content of the course has nothing to do with their career. In many cases, their major has nothing to do with what job they end up with. But their speaking and writing skills. In an information-based economy, those skills...
crucial.
Yeah. And are marketable.
A few more questions down the line, I decided to ask my dad on what criteria does he usually grade essays on, and what kind of feedback does he give to his students on each essay?
It's just covered with comments.
Red.
No, I never use red. Never. Because that, I think, would scare them. They would think that that's, every comment is negative, and it's far from it. You know, I give them as much encouragement as I can. I just... have a sort of conversation with them, that they have a good idea that they've raised but not developed. Tell them that and offer them some more information to develop it with. I feel I'm putting it, I'm serious about their work as they are. And, you know, they're grateful for it. And I didn't want them to think that my comments were necessarily negative. That I have a lot to say about their paper. In addition to all my marginal comments at the end, I will give them summary comments that sometimes run on for pages.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody's a fine writer, every semester you'll get a few students who can write. You know, I push them. I praise them. They have a gift. Excellent, producing excellent work. They can always get better. I try to make them understand that for a good writer, every word is a significant, that they need to be conscious of the rhythm of their sentences, the music of their sentences, the sounds that come through. I mean, I'm not by any means encouraging them to write sentences.
The final question that I posed to my dad is, what does he think gives him the biggest sense of accomplishment in teaching, and how does he involve his students?
School for Poets, and one of her poems, which don't have titles, they're just generally known by the first line. She's speaking to one of her students, and in this she's consoling that student because... another student that the one she's consoling loved is taking the job as a tutor hundreds of miles away. And Sappho tells her in the poem that they share a bond that can't be broken by time or distance. And just before the last stanza, there's a shortened stanza that doesn't carry on the thread of the story, so it seems it's just purely descriptive. And the curious thing is that there's a huge amount of alliteration, assonance, consonants, every type of alliteration in the words in these lines. And you realize the reason these lines are there is for the sound of them to enact a bond. These words create a web of sound that's so strong and so coherent. that it just enacts the bond that Sappho was talking about to her student. And students realize that in literature, you can create meaning with more than just the words and their defined meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Just by pure sound. Like this, seeing students' jaws drop sometimes. Or just their eyes light up when they realize that they've discovered a new way to understand literature, and they've gained a whole new realization of what literature can do, how it can create meaning, and how it can convey.
The third interview by Maggie Hohenstein is about her mother's job as a sign language interpreter. My mom, Brandy, crosses boundaries daily because of her job as a sign language interpreter. When asked what it was like, she said that it was difficult, but also had its rewards.
It's a challenging role because deaf people want us to be on their side. Hearing people want us to be on their side. And right. We're just trying to be neutral. You know?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
When asked why everyone wasn't just on the same side, she answered,
"They have a level of pity that deaf people resent. They don't want to be pitied. They don't see themselves as disabled. They see themselves as a linguistic minority. And so because of that, there's a level of resistance on behalf of deaf people on their part to sometimes meet hearing people halfway. And so there can be this group of deaf people who can be very angry and bitter and not want and just expect that hearing people to them to do all the work. And that's not going to happen. Unfortunately, that's just not going to happen.
However, it is nowhere near being entirely bad. Being able to see what comes from her work allows my mom to continue being excited about it.
But then what's really awesome is when you see these two sides, these two boundaries, come together successfully and gain a new understanding of each other. And those are the moments where I love what I do. And it's really cool. And when you see a deaf person advocate for themselves in a successful way.
She told me about moments when either side of the boundary didn't want her there. She explained that sometimes people didn't see the need for someone to help them.
I was saying how there's been situations where people have resented, like deaf people have resented the hearing interpreter. I had a situation pretty early on when I was interpreting where I had a hearing person really, really resent that I was there. And I went into this doctor's office appointment with this woman who was from another country, a deaf woman from another country, who knew American Sign Language but didn't know English at all, couldn't read or write English. And it was a doctor's appointment for a female problem. And we go back into the room, and the doctor's, it's the first time she'd been there, and the doctor's asking her all the standard questions, medical history, that kind of stuff. And then he says to her, "Well, now I have to ask you some very personal questions. Do you want the interpreter to leave?" And I made that face that you just made, like, what? So I interpreted that. And the deaf woman made the same face, and she kind of went, "What?" And she said, "No." And the doctor flipped out and started screaming at me. "I don't want you here. You're breaking doctor-patient confidentiality. I don't need you. Do you know how much money I have to pay you? This is ridiculous. It's a horrible expense. I can't afford it." Like, just yelling at me. All these horrible, and I'm just standing there interpreting it, like, okay, yeah, all right, this is good, okay, right. And he said something like, "I've had deaf patients before, I can communicate with them using writing, we don't need to do this, you don't need to be here." And she had the courage to speak up and say, I can't read English because I'm not from this country. I'm from, it was Ukraine or someplace. So this writing isn't going to work for me. It's not going to work. I won't understand what you're saying. And he said, we can do it. You'll be fine. I don't want her here, blah, blah, blah. I then asked permission to step out of my role as the neutral interpreter, which is what you have to do. If I want to do anything that's advocating for either side or myself, I have to ask for permission from the deaf person to do that. Can I step out of my role and explain why I'm here, what my code of ethics are? Sure. So I did that. I said, turn to the doctor. I said, doctor, just so you know, I work under, same as you do, I work under a code of professional ethics. And he said, I don't care about your professional ethics. I don't care. Just continued to scream at me until finally the deaf woman said, interrupted and said, the interpreter is not leaving. The interpreter is staying. And I was shaking. I was so agitated and upset, but I had to go ahead and finish that appointment. And I've had, that's not the first time I've had stuff like that happen where people just freak out on me.
There was another time when she worked with a deaf person who also had vision loss. And there were very particular things that she needed.
And so I had to sit in a particular distance so she could see me. And she needed to sit in a particular space so that the light of the color of the painting on the wall wasn't bothering her. And the principal wouldn't let it happen. And he started screaming at me. And he was like, Miss, I need you to move over there. You need to sit over there. And I just looked at him going, Miss, we're the same age. Don't you miss me. I'm not one of your little elementary students. I couldn't say that to him as badly as I wanted to. I just interpreted him yelling at me to my deaf person.
There are moments where what my mom does is hard and difficult.
So it's very challenging.
But there are also moments where it all comes together and it's worth it.
And the hearing person finally get it. And go, oh, yeah, well, of course I can't tell you to close your eyes and then give you instruction. Well, duh, you know, that. And, you know. And then for this, to see the hearing person, like, be creative, you know, and try and come up with a new idea that everyone likes better. Just even telling a professor, can you write that information on the board, you know, instead, it's, you know, if you're giving everybody your email address or your phone number or whatever for them to contact you, can you write that on the board? It's easier for everybody because everybody has different learning styles. And so people who are auditory, people who are visual, and I try to emphasize that with professors too a lot and just say, you know, if you can do it this way, you're probably benefiting not just the deaf student in your classroom, but 50% of the other students in your classroom will also benefit from this. So you're just improving your teaching. So those are the moments. I enjoy those moments. Those moments are fun, and they're cool.
By crossing the boundary of language daily, my mom has an insight into two worlds, one of which is hearing and one of which is deaf. This insight allows her to continue and expand her crossing of the boundary.
Our fourth interview by Clarissa Hudson is about crossing mental health boundaries.
Hi, I'm Clarissa, and we're going to talk about crossing boundaries emotionally going through your life. There are many things that a person has to endure throughout their lives from childhood to adulthood. Today we have a woman named Rosemary who is going to tell us about her life obstacles. As a 52-year-old woman, her trials are a bit different from the ones that people might face today, but that doesn't mean they're not as important or as life-changing. and doesn't mean that her insight on things aren't up to date or helpful for people who are growing up in the 20th century. Even at a young age, she had to deal with problems that were brought on inside her school.
The little boy was bothering me, and he kept picking at me. I think that may have been before high school. And I had to go home, and I told my mom. And in those times, parents were a little bit different. They made you go back out there and fight the person. They didn't want you just to come home. So my mom marched me down the street back to the school, find a little boy, but we couldn't find a little boy. So I guess she just let it go. But then I guess one day I just got tired of him picking on me. I guess I really didn't understand the term bullying. Mm-hmm. But I guess one day I had enough, and the little boy kept picking at me. So next thing I knew, I was on him, and I had him by the throat, and I wouldn't let go. And then he had to call my mom, and they had to try to pull me off, and eventually I let him go. Mm-hmm. But it was just, I guess sometimes you get to a point where you just can't take it anymore.
That snap one when you black out?
Yeah. So that was, I guess, scary for me.
There's always that turning point when someone is just taken from their regular mindset and put into a very hectic situation where they lose themselves and they forget who they are and do something that is out of their character. When she was older and going on to college, she was walking to church when a man had walked up behind her and hit her in the head and stole her bag. But as a woman that she was, she didn't let that define her. She kept going on with her life. She went on, she got married, she had 4 kids, she had a job and made money and a life for her and her family. She was determined to be a strong-willed woman and not let her past disable her or cripple her from being all that she could be. Even after accomplishing all of this, there is something that every person regrets, and there is one specific thing that this woman does regret that she didn't do when she was younger.
I never graduated from college. I think that's the only thing that I really regret in my life. I would have liked to have graduated from college and maybe gotten a degree to be like a motivation or incentive for my children.
Mm-hmm. As a mother and having 4 kids, she wants them to have a bright future with a college education. There are so many differences between the old days and the new days, and there are things that are better and worse about that.
I think it's a big difference compared to today. Because of so much technology, they don't sit down at the table. We sit down at the table and we would eat dinner. It's too much fast food, processed food. They actually had gardens, and you go out to the garden, get your food, and then you come in and you cook your food. You may go to stores to get your meats. Like, I remember they... 9th and Market used to be a big place where you go get all kinds of meats and stuff. And you come home and you cook and you clean and you have fresh vegetables, fresh fruit. Today it's like everything's in the can or processed, meals prepared, but it was healthier for you compared to then than it is now. And you had a lot of family quality time. You sit down, you actually talk. You add with a pencil, not a calculator, mm-hmm. You know? So sometimes I think today they have too much technology, and it takes away from family interaction and family life. Fresh air and sunshine. You go today, the children sit in the room. Go outside. They don't know what outside is. Yes. They want to sit there and play computers and stuff. And then cell phone. You talk on the cell phone. We didn't have cell phones back in that time. You had a telephone, so whatever it was, you get home, you answer the phone. When you got home, or they have a recording. Mm-hmm. But it's a big difference. Well, it started off with 2 in the family, but sometimes the husband may die. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, there was always 2 in the family. There really wasn't a lot of single parent compared to now. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they had to work and they did domestic work, like cleaning homes,
mm-hmm.
or stuff. The men would be out, whatever the men would be doing. Because my father was working for an oil company. So you wouldn't see him a lot. He would come home in the evening, but you could smell the oil and stuff. But he was there, like, on the weekends if he wasn't working. But with my mom, she did domestic work. So, I mean, she had to go to people houses, and she would have to take care of their children, wash, cook, and clean, and then she would come home. So she may not have been in the mood to do a lot of washing, cooking, cleaning for us, I guess because she's been doing it all day, mm-hmm. and she's tired physically. So she would expect us to look after ourselves, do what we're supposed to do. And I guess you would have to grow up a little bit faster than normal, but we still had time to play, run around, play games, talk, go places, and do after-school activities and stuff. But they expect you to be a little more responsible.
This really applied to her family in a sense to where she saw her mom way more than she saw her dad, and so they had to do a lot of things for themselves.
It was five of us. She was a single parent. She had to take care of us by herself, and she had to work. So at that time, they didn't tolerate a lot of nonsense. Mm-hmm. They expect you to be responsible, and the oldest child had to take care of the rest of the children, and we all had to chip in as far as cooking and cleaning and shopping and, you know, doing things around the house because our mother had to work.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't really have a lot of patience and tolerance for nonsense. When they told you to do something, you did it. You didn't talk back. You didn't give them no lip. They just looked at you, and you knew, okay, I better act right or I'm going to get it. And what was nice at that time, which I think is kind of sad today, in today's society, if your neighbor saw you doing something, they would beat you and tell your parents. And then when you got home, you would get a beating again from your parents. So that I sort of kind of miss a little bit compared to the day. They weren't abusive. Mm-hmm. They didn't leave mark or bruises on you. But it was more family-oriented, and they would look after everybody's children. And that, so-and-so, I know your mama. I'm going to tell your mama. So you knew you had to behave yourself.
The current problems and the emotional issues don't just lie with the adults. There are many kids nowadays who have the stress level of an adult person. The best way to really help somebody is to first listen and try to figure out a way to help them figure out what they need to do.
I would want to know, or at least try to figure out, where is it coming from and why.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order for you to get to that point, means something must have happened before then to get up to that point. So I would try to be as understanding and, I guess, as sympathetic as possible and try to find out where the problem is. A little child one time came in... when I came to work, and he came into the program, he was mad and angry. And I'm like, because I always ask my children, how was your day today? You have a great day? And the little child said, no, I had a terrible day. So I said, okay, well, just a minute. And I pulled him on the side, and I said, why did you say you had a terrible day? And then the child would just talk and say, well, blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay, well, let's think for 1 minute. Do you think it was something that you could have did better? Or is this something that you think that you could have handled differently? And then the child would stand there, a little fidgety. And then they would say, well, I guess I could have did this or I could have did that. And then I said, well, do you feel a little better now that you talked about it and you got it off on your chest? Are you still having a bad day? Do you still feel mad and angry? And they said, no, I feel a little better. Then they'll go on their merry way. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do our afternoon program just to get them to stop for a minute. To think about what happened, and then maybe in the process of them thinking about it and talking about it, they're like getting it off their chest, it gives them opportunity to say, well, maybe I could have did this differently, or maybe I could have said that. Try to get them a new perspective or a newer idea how to handle a situation. Sometimes when you're caught up in things and things happen, we may not always handle or say the right thing at that moment. But when you think about it later, then you say, oh, maybe I could have did this or I could have did that. And it gives you a new perspective of how to handle things just in case it happened again.
The only way to really overcome things that happen and to help each other grow in life and to keep this world stable is we have to come together, and we have to be a community again. We can't be all separate and trying to push other people down to make ourselves feel better. We need to get back to those old day ways, in a way, and really teach the young and the old that we need to help each other and to be there for each other, because we won't survive if everybody's trying to do me, myself, and I.
Our fifth and final interview by Alicia Rothwell is about growing up.
Another woman's words are your secrets.
My full name is Talia Danae Pritzwars. I'm in the ninth grade. I believe it was in fifth grade. We had family problems. What? And we got taken out of school in Jersey, and the schools in Jersey wouldn't take us in because it was too late in the year.
She failed fifth grade class due to parenting. Next, she explains her speech impediment.
I can't say certain words, like I can't say synonym. I can't say Ascetis. Well, I say all of this funny. I can't say aminal or terminal. I don't really know what other words I don't say right as a child. People don't like, I don't like when people correct me on it. So if they hear it, they ignore it. But Alicia just has a problem with it.
Trust and freedom.
The word trust, okay. So somebody who would never, you know, like let me down. Somebody who's always there. Somebody who's like wouldn't stab me in the back. World's favorite. I might be Mother Nisha Rothwell, the mother of Alicia Mae Rothwell. I don't know.
When you leave this interview, what would you be going to do?
Cry.
Why?
Because, this makes me think about a lot. Like, a whole lot. And a lot of it makes me want to cry.
What have some of your relationships been like?
Relationships like what?
Have you dated before?
Answer the question with a statement.
Yes, I have dated before.
Are you recently dating?
Yes. And it's a rocky relationship because we have haters. People in my school like to spread rumors. Well, because there are about 59 people in my house. Well, there were up until recently, but still, there were a lot of people in my house, so it was always loud. There were never, like, any quiet moments unless the whole house was asleep. And then my mom, she's crazy. She's, like, really, really crazy.
Describe your mom's personality.
Schizophrenic, probably bipolar. She has multiple personalities. She's prescribed for all this. Does she take her pills? I'm not sure. But I recommend her taking them. That's okay.
How is her relationship with the rest of your siblings?
Well, she absolutely adores my older brother, Gary. He's absolutely, like, the limelight of her life. I don't know. I think he goes to Westchester College because he was currently,
He was currently at HBCU. He went to Cheney University. And then he got hurt because he plays football. And now he goes to some other college. But, yeah, she really, really likes him. My sister, Tiffany. My sister, Tiffany. She's her firstborn, so she absolutely loves her so much. My mom loves all her children, just not at the same time. My sister Tyra, she's a Spitfire still. She wasn't a very nice child. She kind of resembled the cartoon character Almira. She's killing you with love. my brother Takeem, well, we're yin and yang. We're not Julian Roman. We're yin and yang, hip and hop. Cheese and sprinkles, ice cream and cake, two peas in a trippy pod, whatever. He was always, like, you know, the bad child, the dark one. And I was always, you know, the golden child. I always behaved in school and at home. I was the snitch of the family. So my mom would bribe me with cookies and money and cake and treats. I was a fat child.
When did snitching and your siblings cross lines?
When something got broke while my mom was at work and she wanted to know who did it. And she would pay me about, like, well, this was a while ago. Like, I stopped snitching when I was, like, 7 because they used to beat me up when she left for work because my mom was always working before she got hurt. And so she would bribe me and I would snitch and then I would cry when she would leave because I thought they were going to beat me up, which they did. They locked me in the basement for about 3 hours, and they fed me twice. Because I was a fat child. I keep saying that. I was a greedy child. And so they fed me twice. They locked me in the basement, though. It was a fully furnished basement, but still, I was in the basement by myself. But, yeah. My mom, she went through this really, really serious depression. And so after that, she would just be, like, tripping all the time. She was just go crazy, and the next minute be totally calm.
Do you feel as if you can go to your mom for anything?
Honestly?
Yes.
No, not at all.
Would you mind stating why?
I would mind, but I don't want to die, so I'm going to answer it. I don't really trust my mom. My mom doesn't trust me, but that's because I think, you know, she was a little loose when she was young, so I don't know what was going on in the 90s and the 80s, but, something must have been going on because, she's always accusing me. But I really trust my mom to handle the situation well because, like, if I came to her about, like, a guy I liked or, like, relationship problems, she would always bring it back to, like, sex, and I'm going to get pregnant and all of this and this, that, and the third, so I really wouldn't trust her with anything.
Is your mom there for you, though? Such as financially, emotionally, so forth and so forth?
Most of the time, my mom is there financially and emotionally. Not always. She doesn't always see, because I'm really emotional. So she doesn't always understand why I'm so emotional, and like if I'm crying for some odd reason, she doesn't understand why I'm crying, and I don't really want to tell her. So most times she just doesn't care. She'll ask me if I'm okay, and if I say yes, she'll just walk out. And that's probably like the best thing she could do.
And why do you think that?
Because if she like snaps and she trips out, then that's kind of like, it's going to make me snap and trip out, because if you don't really care and all you're going to do is jump to conclusions and get angry and assume, then there's no point in me talking to you. So you might as well just ask them, okay, and if I tell you yes, then go away.
Who can you go to with anything?
My sisters, most times.
Anyone in particular?
My sister Taisha, she's not really my sister. I call her sister because she's been around for almost like 3 or 4 years. Also my sister Jamie, because she's been around for like 5 years. And I say them because they're understanding. And it's like with my own sisters, they automatically jump to like, my safety, and everything else. And yeah.
What are some of the main people that are in your life every day?
I've said this before, my best friend Alicia, she's there. We see each other like every day. I don't see us ever like not being friends. I mean, we argue a lot, but she's still there when I need her. And my sisters.
Do you have any kind of boundaries that you wouldn't want them to cross?
Right.
Just like the main people that are there every day for you.
Like, I wouldn't want them to judge me based on any decisions I make. If anything, they should be there, like, guiding me, because they're all older than me. So they should be, like, my guideline. Like, when you're writing an essay, they should be, like, they should be my rough draft so that my final revision is in A-plus material. So I really wouldn't want them to judge me based off of, like, any decision I make. Like, if I decided to elope and get married at 17, then they shouldn't, like, tell me that my marriage is going to fail or something like that. That's not what I want. I want them to give me good advice.
Have they ever steered you wrong yet?
No, they haven't. All of my sisters are into girls. I'm straight, but all my sisters are into girls. But even all my sisters, they've at one point liked guys. There was this time, like just recently, I had a argument with my recent boyfriend, and even though they're all in a relationship with another female, they gave me wonderful, wonderful advice. They told me to just sit down and talk and have a conversation. And as long as we could communicate with each other, we were going to be all right. So that's what I tried my best to do. And so I guess it kind of worked out really well. I'm happy it did, though, because he's, like, really, really sweet. Like, I love him so much.
Do you have a cell phone?
Yes, I do. It's whack.
How often do you use it?
About 6 times a day. 6 times an hour.
For what?
For, like, I go on the internet, I go on my Instagram, I go on my Facebook, I call my mom, I call my best friend, I call my sisters, I keep in touch with all my family because we're not all in Philly.
How's your social life?
It's whack.
Why so?
Because I don't have a social life.
Bye.
Oh my gosh.
Bye. See you later. Get out. Stop speaking. Why is your social life whack?
It's whack because I really don't have one. Like last summer, me, my best friend Alicia, my sister Maya, her cousin Cece, and all our other friends, all our other groupies, and all our other followers. Yes, there are many of them. We spent most of our days in the park being bored, being accused of going to see boys every day.
Did we go see boys, for the record? Not part of my project, but...
No, we did not.
Go put that out there.
We have, like, much more to do with our lives. Don't worry about some nappy-headed boys from Frankfurt.
How old are you?
I am 15 years old.
Do you
I'll plan, be 15 in 2 weeks, though. A week and a half.
Do you plan on getting a job?
Yes, I do. I'm going in for an interview at the zoo soon. I love boys.
Ramadan Shabazz Ali. Ramadan. Let me give you your conceived name, Thomas Jones. Can you leave? Can you leave?
I'm a 16.
Pop up! It's not funny. It's a project and you're playing games.
They all are like so chill upstairs. So they really are so loud. I like fried chicken. My mom makes the best fried chicken in the world.
She does?
She does. It's so good.
Do you love your mother?
Sometimes.
Thank you for doing this interview. I appreciate it. Thank you for doing this interview. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.